We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. So Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, and Kirk Cousins are the subjects of this year's edition of Quarterback, the Netflix documentary series, which this is the second one they've done on quarterback. They went quarterbacks a couple years ago. It was Cousins, Mariota, and Mahomes. Then they switched to wide receivers. I'm guessing the wide receiver one didn't pop as well as they wanted to, Seth, which is why they went back to quarterbacks. I know they were having a hard time finding quarterbacks that wanted to be in it, so they pivoted to wide receivers last year. And it was some pretty compelling guys. I will say this, I didn't watch it. Quarterbacks pop, you know?
Quarterbacks pop. Yeah. That's the biggest thing that we know for sure.
Yeah.
That's one of the first things Vandermeer ever said to me when I was getting into this business. It was like, anything quarterbacks. It's just, they drive the league. You can see why the league wants to protect them so much.
Yeah, no doubt. So Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins. I've not watched any of it yet. It all dropped a couple of days ago. Have you watched? That's my project for the next few days, I think, is to watch it.
No, I haven't watched any of them.
Are you going to watch it?
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, give me an assignment.
Okay, yes.
You know I can't be trusted to set my own schedule or read Baseball Savant.
You need
to give me assignments.
I will let you know when I am watching it so that we make sure that we're both at least watching a couple episodes of it. So we'll.
That's a little too vague. Got to give me a plan.
I will give you a plan, but not on this segment. Yes. As we're doing radio on the air right now, but I will give you a plan for this. Joe Burrow, independent of having watched it, there's a cut of Joe Burrow on the sidelines at the end of a game against the Titans this past season in week 15, where the Bengals won this game 37-27, but the Bengals had all sorts of sloppy procedural penalties in the game. At the beginning of this cut, you're going to hear Joe Burrow telling one of his offensive linemen to wake the bleep up. And then you're going to hear some audio of Zach Taylor trying to talk Joe Burrow off the ledge at the end of a game on the bench in which they won by double digits and scored 37 points in the game. Here's what it sounded like. Joe Burrow, perfectionist.
False start. Offense.
The penalty train rolls on.
What the f*** are we doing, man? Wake the f*** up. Mental mistakes all f***ing day.
Hey, way to finish the day. That's a great drive to finish it. I know it's a frustrating,
embarrassing performance by us. F***ing embarrassing.
Listen, we'll address it. We'll address it, but at the same time, let's enjoy some
that. We sucked today. That was embarrassing.
Okay.
We jumped off sides f***ing eight times.
I know that. Okay. I'm gonna play as our defense.
Sometimes I walk into an emotional moment that I know I'm walking into an emotional moment, and it becomes a really emotional moment, and it may be viewed as conflict. It's really just passion for the game.
You know, I understand that we won the game, and we want to be happy that we win the game, but at the same time, when things aren't good enough, I'm not going to act like they were.
Yeah, so there you go. And now keep in mind, this is a Cincinnati team at that point in the season was battling just to keep their heads above water. You know, they're just trying
this
to stay in the
right,
race.
Right, right. Yeah, know? I mean, we know the story of the Bengals season.
Yeah.
The defense obviously was he's
mess.
Not talking about the defense there. He's talking about the offense that scored
37 points in that game.
37 points in that game. This is the one key thing. Listen, everybody. I know everybody gets all sensitive when we start talking pronouns these days. He used we repeatedly in that. That was the thing that I liked about it was he's flipping out, but at least in those clips, he is pointing the finger at the offensive line, but every single time he said we. And I like that shows a certain level of understanding his role, and like there's an appropriate way to flip out.
Yeah.
That you're not always gonna be calm, cool, and collected. but it hits a lot different when it's a we thing versus a you guys. There's nothing worse. Everybody listening right now had that kid on their high school football team that basically wanted to be sure everybody knew that everybody needed to play more like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, come on, you guys. Yeah. You got to want it like I do. Yep. Like, that's the worst.
Yes.
The opposite is, all right, he is the leader of the offense. He is an established he's Joe freaking Burrow. That, yeah, when he's flipping out like that, he's not talking about just you or you or you. It's all of us. Like, we're just not doing it the right way. I thought it was a good. It's an appropriate flip out. And, you're setting a standard that's – you're letting everybody know that this is not our standard.
Yeah.
I don't care how many points we scored. This is not acceptable.
Yeah, I said yesterday when we played it, I'm 100% in favor of this. If that's his management style, if that's how he views things, if he views it as not being good enough – too often after some of these games, like, it's an NFL game and we won the game and we scored more points, and I get it.
Yeah, I hate it when they sound like baseball players.
It's hard to win in the NFL, and I'm like, yeah, and yet half the league does it every week. It's
an 8-8 league.
Yeah.
So even if there's 17 games now.
I liked it. And when you and I played this yesterday, I asked you the question, should C.J. Stroud be like that? You know, maybe he is like that. We don't know. He's not mic'd up all the time. I have no idea. You know,
right. And what I said is, it doesn't. I don't like trying to impose a certain leadership style on any given quarterback, because guys do it different ways.
Yeah.
And you can have great success with different ways. You know, Joe Montana wasn't that way.
No.
Eli Manning wasn't that way.
Yep.
Does all of a sudden does C.J. Stroud have to try to be like Joe Burrow in that leadership style? I don't think it's always as clear cut or as easy to say.
No. And what makes it a more poignant topic though with C.J. is his offensive line is even worse than Joe Burrow's offensive line was that day. You know, so there are plenty of opportunities for C.J. probably to react the way that Joe Burrow did in that moment. And again, you know, Joe Burrow's mic'd up for a documentary, so we're seeing it, and that's what pops on the documentary. There's probably days worth of footage that makes it into a 1-hour episode of Quarterback. Clint Sterner was talking about this on The Drive earlier this week about CJ's leadership style. He and Ron had played this clip from Joe Burrow. I know it was a jumping off point for this bit of audio you're about to hear right here.
Ron, it's exactly what I'm talking about, right? Because here's the best part of that is when the head coach, who happens to be the play caller, so the main communicator with the quarterback in this instance, right? When that guy comes over, and the quarterback, being Joe Burrow, if he sits there and goes, yeah, you're right, I'll calm down. We did some good stuff. Yeah, you're right. Then the coach goes to the locker room. Hey, guys, we won. Let's focus on that we won. And then everybody comes to practice Monday, and it's just happy-go-lucky, and it's acting like what that performance right there, 8 penalties, 8 false starts or whatever it was, isn't going to get your ass kicked in the division they play in, absolutely going to get their ass kicked, but definitely where Joe Burrow expects to take that football team. Right, but because Joe Burrow says no, boss, that is unacceptable. That's embarrassing, and makes his point sure cussing and maybe overdoing it. But that is, at the end of the day, that offense is not going to go as Zach Taylor, the offensive play caller, is going to allow it to go. That offense is going to go the direction of Joe Burrow. It doesn't matter if Zach Taylor. Now, obviously, this is a head coach we're talking about, but if we're talking about play callers, and if we're bringing it back to Houston, we're talking about play callers, like. This offense needs to go the way of C.J. Stroud. This offense doesn't need to go the way of Nick Caley. Like, Nick Caley doesn't need to dictate what is said in meetings in terms of, like, this kind of stuff. When there's poor play, like, C.J. Stroud needs to make sure that every coach around him understands, like, no, that's unacceptable. We're not going to go to the post-game presser. We're not going to go to the team meeting. We're not going to go into Monday and Tuesday's meetings with this, oh, we got us a win, boys. We got us a win, because that is
both. It's hard to win in the NFL.
Yeah, it's hard to win in this NFL. It's hard to win the division around here. Like, at some point in time, and I've said this a million times, at some point in time, the Houston Texans offense, in terms of standards being set, in terms of guys being held accountable, in terms of the brand of football that is going to be Houston Texans offensive football, that needs to come from C.J. Stroud. If you're going to pay that guy $60 million a year, that needs to be C.J. Stroud. That doesn't need to be, Nick Caley does or doesn't have the ability to talk that way, and he is or he isn't an alpha, or he is or he isn't a great play caller, or he has the ability to hold somebody accountable or not. No, C.J. Stroud needs to be. And that is exactly what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, I guess, and I agree to Clint to a certain extent. I think it's, but you also got to remember that I don't know if Joe Burrow was like that in his second season.
Right, right.
You know, it's something you do have to grow into. And I think that there's probably at least one of the considerations of trading away Laremy Tunsil was that I don't know if Laremy's the kind of guy that responds to a second-year player in the league dog cussing the offensive line for all of the miserable play. And when you've got, I mean, it was a bad dynamic. One of the, I can say from the outside looking in, man, when your best offensive lineman is known as the guy that never practices and that selfishly has false starts over and over again, it really chafes against me when people try to downplay those false starts because they don't recognize how selfish those penalties were. That is a dude being a lone operator and meanwhile also being looked to by other offensive linemen as the best guy on the team and the highest paid offensive lineman and all those things. And also a guy who's much older than CJ Stroud. And it can create some uncomfortable dynamics. So I don't know exactly how everything was, but it's not ideal, you know?
Yeah.
Epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with AllTrails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
Yeah, I wonder, boy, that you bring up Laremy Tunsil. And again, this is a mic'd up episode of Quarterback where we're getting a complete window into the dynamic of a football game between the Bengals and the Titans as it pertains to the offensive line play in that game. So we don't know if CJ ever had moments like that with Laremy, what the conversations were when Laremy jumps off sides three times in a series.
In one series. Yeah.
Like, I just think, like, if CJ had used that type of management style, I'll call it, that Joe Burrow did, if he wasn't doing that, but what if he had? You know, what if he had been a guy who could dog cuss Laremy Tunsil? Maybe the guy doesn't jump off sides and maybe he does respond to it. You know, like, I have no idea. Maybe should have yelled at him. Maybe somebody should have yelled at him.
Well, those are the things that go on too, where I can't remember who the young quarterback was. This is a long time ago, Sean. If you pull this, I'll be very impressed. I'm going to buy you a nice gift bag. Okay. It was with the Cardinals. It was a young quarterback who kind of was yelling at one of the offensive linemen who was a veteran. Okay. And they were mic'd up, and the veteran was basically, hey, you don't talk to me that way. You don't talk to me that way. And all of a sudden, you got this situation where your quarterback's being defied by a veteran offensive lineman in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's where the age does come into it. And CJ himself is struggling performance-wise at that time, not putting up the same. So, yeah, they're the second year that CJ Stroud endured last year, I think ultimately in the long run might be such a positive. Because those are the painful things that have to happen, that you have to go through to really genuinely get to that spot where you've got some scars and you've been through it and you got to learn how to A, establish yourself as a player, but B, also know that sometimes, hey, whether you're playing well or not, you're still that leader. And what does it look like? Do you have to be a yeller? Do you have to be a guy that just holds people accountable, whatever it might be? You're not going to be that finished product in your second year. You know, I don't think I'd love to go back and watch Tom Brady in his second year when they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the instances of him freaking out about bad drills and 7-on-7 and everything were not nearly as the same as when he was later. You know, we were in West Virginia, and it was one of the most impressive things I ever saw was I think it was a 7-on-7 where the Patriots actually played pretty well versus the Texans in that combined training camp.
Yep.
And Tom Brady, after the 7-on-7 drill, where they probably completed like 7 of 8 passes, was flipping out.
About the one incompletion.
In the second week of training camp. Yeah. I don't know if he was like that in his second year. Maybe he was. I don't know. But some of it is you gotta age into it and you gotta have a certain amount of cachet to it before you can get to that point.
You think CJ's got that in him? I think he's got it in him, you know, to evolve into that kind of guy.
Well, I think his personal standards are really, really high.
Yes.
And then it's a matter of feeling it out and, all right, what am I? And, you know, part of it, too, for younger quarterbacks is you got to accept it's one of the best things. This is one of the best things that comes from being a parent is that you learn that, okay, sometimes my kid is going to hate me. Mm-hmm. And you know what? At the end of the day, I know they actually love me, but in that moment, they hate me. But I'm going to do what's right.
Yeah.
And you just learn. You kind of build those calluses of like, okay, my kid's going to hate
me
for a while.
Good analogy, yes.
So be it. And I'm not saying, you know, CJ needs to go out and knock somebody up this offseason, but like that's part of maturation as a manager or anybody else. It's like, okay, sometimes people are going to be upset. We'll work through it and we'll get over it.
Yeah.
People's feelings get hurt. And then you massage the situation however you need to,
mm-hmm.
but you can't be overly worried about people being upset with you. That's part of being a good parent or a good manager or however else.
I Googled Cardinals quarterback yelling at offensive linemen and nothing's coming up. I was trying to cheat.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. I was trying one of our listeners probably remembers it.
Texted in Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday ? No, Seth said it was on the Cardinals. And by the way, Peyton Manning came into the league pretty much allowed to yell at anybody he wanted to on that Colts team.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Peyton Manning that our listener brought up Peyton Manning because there is also that dynamic. When I say that you don't need a certain specific personality type for any. That's the reason so many former Patriots coaches have failed.
Yep.
Because they're trying to imitate Belichick's personality. Instead of recognizing and understanding that, look, Belichick gets away with doing a lot of stuff, probably the wrong way. Because he's so good at other things.
He's a genius.
One of the biggest mistakes you could ever make is trying to emulate every facet of a successful person. Because every successful person has flaws. So if you try to emulate their flaws, well, meanwhile having your own flaws, you're doubling down on flaws and it's dumb. So when it comes to a team, a lot of it is what's the mix? You know, like, hey, Tony Dungy, maybe as a head coach, didn't have enough of an edge when he was in Tampa. And, you know, certainly didn't. He was a defensive-minded head coach, and the offensive side of the ball wasn't the same. Tony Dungy goes to the Colts, and the balance in the organization is kind of like, man, Peyton Manning's a taskmaster, and not to mention a great quarterback. Tony Dungy operates the way he does. Those two personality types were probably a really, really good fit.
Yes.
So just like in a business, you got a CEO, you got a CFO, you got
COO, CIO.
COO.
Yeah, COO.
So what I was thinking of is you need a COO, the taskmaster, the guy that just flat out knows how to get things done.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the head coach. Sometimes it's the offensive coordinator. Sometimes it's the quarterback himself. But it's just a matter of finding that right blend. So I do think, I know Clint said, hey, this can't be Nick Caley being this guy or that guy. I think I disagree with Clint. You know, we're just playing a clip of Clint, but if we were to talk about it, I think that I disagree with thinking that each specific guy has to have a certain personality type. It's in any organization. It's that you do have to have those personality types on the team.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always have to be the quarterback. It doesn't always have to be the head coach. It's just there's got to be that mix and that dynamic that's right.
Yeah, you get a bunch of hotheads and that's all you got. It's going to be a combustible mess. You get a bunch of guys that are too dialed back and accepting of things and it's going to result in failure, just two different paths to failure.
Yeah, the head coach, I mean, sometimes the quarterback being more of a Joe Montana personality is a perfect blend with a coach that's more of a hard edge type of dude, you know? Favre wasn't like a dog cussing type of guy.
Yeah.
And Favre is a man who had no flaws whatsoever, but
none of them documented on Netflix at all. Yes.
I don't know. Like, is Pat Mahomes, I mean, Pat Mahomes gets upset and everything, but I don't look at Pat Mahomes as being quite the same type of guy as Peyton Manning or Tom Brady when it comes to their style.
Or Burrow, who we just heard in that clip right there.
Right, And it seems to be going pretty well for Pat Mahomes.
It is working,
Super Bowl notwithstanding.
It is working. People are guessing at your Cardinals quarterback now. Was it Jake the Snake? Jake the Snake, I think
it
is
was
more,
not. No.
It was, no, he's more likely
His
to go
leadership
take.
Style was
yeah,
not
he's it. More likely to go take bong rips with the offensive line after a game than yell at them about a sack.
Listen, guys, you know me. I'm a guy that can't even read the stat sheet, right? Like in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. It probably wasn't the Cardinals. It was probably somebody else.
Well,
so I'm going to spend this afternoon trying to figure out who I'm talking about.
Someone is saying Josh Rosen, but it feels like you're talking about something
it was back
way
in the day.
Before Josh Rosen. Yeah.
Listen, youngster, but when I say back in the day, it's different than what you mean by back
in
the day.
Not 2018. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, you brought up Mahomes. Speaking of Mahomes, let's skip down to this, Ben. All right, so Mahomes, is Patrick Mahomes fat? There is a picture that has surfaced from his most recent vacation where he certainly doesn't look shredded. I will say that. He did, but I don't think Patrick Mahomes has ever been thought to be a guy that gets it done by being this made on AI or in a lab tour de force physically. Like, he's just freaky. He's got a freaky arm, freaky football IQ, all those things. Kevin Keatsman is a former radio host in Kansas City who now does a podcast, who went on his podcast this week and got a lot of attention because he looked at that picture of Mahomes and said, Patrick Mahomes is fat.
Meanwhile, vacation photos are popping up of Patrick Mahomes, and he's fat. I'm going to say it, and I'm going to tell you the truth. That's why you hit the play button. He's an embarrassment. You're a $500 million quarterback. You've made all these comments in the offseason that we're going to do our talking on the field. We got our butts kicked in the Super Bowl. We're coming back with a vengeance. Dude, you're fat. Your belly would be fat at my pool, hanging out with us, 60-year-olds, okay? My skin's flabbier than yours. I get it. Stop. Stop the fast food. Do a sit-up. Do something. Yeah, I'm sure he's worked out and strengthened his arm, and he's done all kinds of different things, quarterback things, but there's no training to this man. I don't understand it. He's not a kid anymore. You can't just run through your NFL career eating Taco Bell all the time and DoorDashing fried chicken, which he loves, from that one place over in Leawood where he gets it all the time. It's time, dude. It's time.
All right.
Okay. This is why this is a clown take for multiple reasons. One, all right, let's look up Google shirtless Peyton Manning, shirtless Eli Manning to be certain, shirtless Tom Brady.
Combine Tom Brady.
In his career. Yeah. Well, not even combine Tom Brady. Like, really, until Tom Brady hit the TB12 later in his career.
Yep.
And he was still, like, his physique was nothing to look at. But really, the biggest one where I'm kind of surprised that anybody from Kansas City would say there's no working out. Like, Mahomes does not have the physique. But he does a lot of extra pretty cool stuff in terms of kind of training his body a certain way. He works out, but he doesn't have a six pack. And guess what? Let's look at any various great pitchers or quarterbacks through the years and tell me how important it is to be chiseled as a quarterback.
Right.
It's an exception. It's not the rule. So. I was looking at Mahomes' dad bod pictures yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Brandy walked in. She had questions. And it was, I'm looking at it and realistically thinking, like, okay, it's kind of, like, to call his body a dad body is really giving a lot of credit to actual dad bods.
Hell yes, it is. I'm looking at this. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, he's you could mix in with the pool of my 60-year-old friends. I'm like, I would not want it like that. I would take that in a second.
So quarterback's a different position, and the standards aren't quite the same as other positions.
Right.
But let's think of another great example from guys that didn't have immaculate bodies. Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Do you think he was all right? Like, is Keatsman going to say, like, look at him? He doesn't even look like anything like these other defensive backs.
Right.
Does he even work out?
Yeah.
Like, Sanders isn't impressive. If you look at photos of Deion Sanders in his uniform, you would never guess, based on just his physique, that he was one of the greatest defensive backs who ever lived.
You need to see the video with him, yes.
Yeah, so like I think Keitzman might spend too much time on TikTok or something. He's watching too many fitness influencers to think that the standard of an athletic quarterback body is somehow, you know, chiseled in, out of stone. It's not. It's not. So Mahomes has one of those, he's one of those guys, he walks kind of, you know, pigeon-toed or whatever,
He's
getting the job done. I'm not going to sit here and act like Pat Mahomes was not the issue with the Chiefs offense this year.
No,
you know,
no.
It was an offensive line.
Nobody's
it
watching
was just hodgepodge together.
Yeah, well, no, okay. They were down 40-6 at one point in the Super Bowl, and nobody's saying, like, boy, Patrick Mahomes looks tired out there.
Right, right. You know, that's like, a big question. Yeah, does Pat Mahomes look tired?
No,
it's a really bad take.
Yeah, it's a bad take. That you'll hear tomorrow at 9 a.m. on Take-A-Mania, yes.
I hate that I have to sit here and defend Pat Mahomes like this, but I do. Kleitzman's almost like one of these people that need to, like, body shame actual celebrities or something, and they'll show pictures of him by the pool and say, look at how fat he is, and you're looking at him like, I don't know, is that fat?
Yeah.
He's not fat. He's not obese. He's got a layer of fat on his belly.
You know who
Brett Favre at one point in his career... gained weight because he's like, you know what? I leaned out and everything. And then I just felt like I was the hits hurt more.
Yeah.
I think Roethlisberger may have said something similar, which is that, you know, yeah, I felt like I wanted to be a little bit more sleeker and athletic, but what you realize is those hits that this is one of the hardest things to explain to people. And I don't even put it on social media anymore because I hate getting mansplained about it. Like 5 to 10 pounds as an NFL player, you feel the difference. I could say that as a defensive lineman. The difference between 315 and 305 for me, as a big guy who was a fat foot, the typical defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Like, the hits hurt more when you're 305 than when you're 315.
Wow, really?
As a quarterback, that big a it's a small. Yeah, that's why. Remember we were talking to Nick last year, Casario?
Yeah.
About Damian Pierce, and Damian was Nick was making the point that, hey, Damian's just as strong as he was when he was at his previous body weight or whatever, and he's actually only however many pounds lighter. And I told Nick, I was like, man, it's just that ballast. The ballast matters. There's something about you don't get knocked quite as far. You don't give quite as much ground when you just got a few extra pounds of body weight. So even for the big guys, yeah, it does. Sometimes there's a difference between 335 and 330.
Yeah.
And some guys, it's just that perfect playing weight for Mahomes is probably right about where he was. But to act like he doesn't work out.
Right.
And you live in Kansas City, and you're going to tell me you've never seen any of the footage of him with his offseason workouts? That's just dumb.
Well, then he states it like it's fact, too. That's like Mahomes has been spotted at Taco Bell or something like that. Like, there's a
fried chicken place that he likes.
That he likes. Exactly. So, yeah.
Dwight Howard loved Skittles.
Right.
Is that evidence all of a sudden that Dwight Howard wasn't in shape?
Yeah. So I guess this is the most attention that this Keatsman has gotten in a long time because he's been off the radio. He's got a podcast. That cut was from his podcast that he has, which I guess he's now. I was watching Nick Wright talk about this on Lebatard Show. Nick hates this guy.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature. With over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Nick Wright hates Kevin Keatsman. They battled on Kansas City radio back before Nick got to Houston 15 years ago.
When Nick was coming up. Nick was a young radio host trying to beat Keatsman in the ratings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he hates him because I guess Keatsman was really disrespectful to him. There was a big story about Nick in one of the one of the local magazines there in Kansas City, and they interviewed Keatsman, and Keatsman said something to the effect of, "He's the Jaguars, I'm the Patriots." Now this is back in like 2012.
This is back when radio wars were still.
Yeah.
Radio wars have finally gone by the wayside because it's now like you're competing with all of social media, everything else. So it's the radio wars don't hit. Back then, it was classic radio wars.
It was radio wars, and we're going to play Nick here in a second. We don't have this in the audio. I just had to keep the audio tight because Nick went on for 4 minutes about how much he hates this guy. So I wanted to just take the best parts. But apparently, when Nick finally beat Keatsman in the ratings, he had a party to celebrate it, and he celebrated it at the restaurant that Keatsman owned at the time.
Or at the other radio station owned or whatever.
Well, he owned the radio station. Keatsman owned the radio station, and I think owned a restaurant that went with it. Yeah,
I was confused because he says later he owned the station, so I didn't know if he owned it at the time.
Yeah.
I
know Keatsman. Well, anyways. Yeah. I went to a Jim Rome tour stop in like 2003, and I think he owned the station back then. Anyways, So here is Nick on the Lebatard Show. Expressing just how much he hates the guy that just gave the Mahomes is fat. And this is like right after this big fat take had come out and been made public earlier this week.
He then on a podcast that can't have 35 listeners said this about Patrick Mahomes. And now for the first time in a decade, he's noteworthy while I'm on, one of America's premier platforms, which is to say, not to make it about me, but we know who won that battle. Sorry, Keats. That son of a bitch. I hated him so much. Oh, my goodness gracious. And people are like, oh, Nick, don't. You're punching down. No. It will never feel like punching down. It's a bad dude who's bad for my city, and now people are like local Kansas City radio host. That guy, it's It's like calling someone a local television host if 30 years ago they bought time overnight. Like, give me a break. You hit the trifecta of being a bad person, being dishonest, and the thing that's, you know, worse than all those, totally and wholly untalented. I just never let it go.
That's petty cast material.
Yeah,
right,
so what Nick is referencing there and saying, he's not taking a shot at local radio hosts. He's saying, no, Keatsman has a one-hour show on local radio.
Yeah.
And maybe he might buy, who knows, maybe he pays, buys the time for it.
He might.
I like it. I like the petty.
Oh, yeah.
This is as petty as it gets out of Nick, and he's admitting that he's being petty and that he will never stop being petty towards it.
This
might have to go in the PettyCast Hall of Fame.
We'll replay it next Tuesday for sure. That's what I love about, like, Nick is, and he talked about this with Lebatard too, like, Nick is one way or the other. Like, Nick, with Nick Wright, if you're on his bad side, you're on his bad side forever. If you're a friend, he's fiercely loyal to you. Through good and bad, like, he is fiercely loyal, but like, there's
that's like an Italian mother.
There's no in between. And Nick is not neutral on anybody.
He's like an Italian mother that, like, if some guy dumps her daughter, that guy is getting a hex put on him every night in front of a candle.
Okay, now we're getting texts. Oh, Nick hates this guy. Keatsman is all right in my book. Nick really needs to tell us how he feels. Go, Nick. That's the next text. So, yeah, that is good. That's good. There, that little kerfuffle about Mahomes' body type has given us Take a Mania material for tomorrow and PettyCast material for next week. It's been a good thing for the Payne and Pendergast show, I would say.
I wonder if we have to look, because there's probably a certain percentage of Kansas City people who actually agree with Keatsman. And especially because I know there's a lot of people in Kansas City that they're not super comfortable with him shotgunning beers and everything at the parades and all that. I get that. Like, I understand why people might be that way.
But
trying to act like he's a chubby, fat mess of a dude.
Yeah, that's silly.
Because he doesn't have an Instagram bod. Yeah. I just can't get with that, man. I can't get with it.
What? Okay. You're right. There's a percentage of people that have an opinion on everything. How big a percentage in Kansas City, how big a percentage do you think that is that have any sort of issue with the perception that Mahomes' conditioning is a lower priority for him?
I would say it's like 5%.
Gotta
maybe.
Be low, low,
there's
really
always,
low,
there's
man.
Always, you know, like, there's always, usually the contrarian percentage is about 10%, but given that it's Kansas City, given that the dude has won 3 Super Bowls, I think it's probably around the 5%
mark. Well, what if this was Jose Altuve? Jose Altuve is the Patrick Mahomes of Houston right now, right?
Yeah.
Like the linchpin for the only 2 championships we've had in any recent period here. What if Jose Altuve all of a sudden started looking fat and was, you know,
he was a little chunkier early in his career.
Yeah.
Before he turned into what he is now.
Right.
Yeah, if somebody had that take that he's fat and out of shape or something.
Well, look, or like if the same thing that's going on with Mahomes where the body type is like, I'm not too sure, and he's, you know, he's getting older or whatever the case may be, like what percentage of Astro fans would have any issue with Jose Altuve, do you think?
I don't know. I guess it's dicier just because it's so if it's Altuve in his prime after the World Series victories and everything.
Yeah, like it's Altuve after the 2022 World Series or something.
Like 3% of people.
Yeah, like I think it's like he's on the Mount Rushmore of Houston. You won 2 championships. This is just if Altuve's just gonna have kind of a dad bod and waddle around at second base.
You know what? People used to wonder. Because JJ would be, there would always be these shots of JJ breathing heavily. And because a lot of people would ask questions about this. And you would see it. It was like, hey, is JJ out of shape? Because you see him breathing real hard. And I would try to explain to people, like, dude, it does not matter. Watch distance runners or even like somebody like marathon runners or somebody who runs a 400 or something.
Yeah.
Those people are in pretty damn good shape.
Yeah.
Watch them at the end of a race.
No doubt.
Like, it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in. If you're putting out max effort, that means that you've gotten to that level where you're operating at the very, you're redlining
it. You're pushing
it, you
know? It. Yep.
Yeah. So the guys that redline it, it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in. As a defensive lineman, it's full body martial arts there.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting. So that, JJ breathing hard wasn't an indication that he was out of shape. It was just an indication that he was working really, really, really hard in that moment. But there were still people that were like, I don't know, JJ's out of shape. So JJ, I bet at any given point, even if the Texans had won a Super Bowl and or gotten beat in the Super Bowl,
yeah,
and JJ was breathing heavy in the Super Bowl, I think 10% of Houstonians would have been like, well, JJ's out of
shape. He's out of shape. You're probably right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Someone just texted, yo, fatty. Yeah, exactly. That comes from my Jamaica trip.
Who's the who is the Houston athlete historically who played above his body type? And who had, we had conversations about this, and James Harden is immediately one that springs.
James Harden is who I was going to say. Like, James Harden, yeah, like, if you were to just look at James Harden, especially compared to other NBA players,
yeah,
and you were to say, like, pick the guy out of the lineup here that's 8-time first team all NBA and MVP, James Harden would not be the guy I would pick.
And people never fully accepted that he was as fast getting to the rim,
yep,
as he was. Partly, I think, because people would talk about his step back threes without acknowledging that, yeah, part of the reason he's so good at it is because he is so lethally fast,
yeah,
to drive.
Turn
on
the
his
corner
drives
quick, yeah.
And I think it's because he just doesn't look like Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And then as things started to go south, then we got really obsessed with James Harden's body type.
Yeah.
And like, to where you forget about how effective he was when he looked exactly the same way he did. So I think James Harden might be the guy that was the closest to this.
I don't think anybody ever got upset about him and his body type because there was never a point where he was really ineffective.
Well, that last season.
No. I'm about to say somebody else. Oh, okay. I'm leading into somebody else. The Justin Verlander. Like Justin,
yeah,
you know, Justin Verlander's productivity.
He's got a dad bod.
And the sheer force of nature that he was throwing,
right,
a baseball for the Astros belied what he looked like physically. He looked like some dude who should have been shooting like a 72 at the member guest every weekend and excelling there. And he probably does more so than a guy who could throw a baseball 100 miles an hour.
The whole thing about pitchers, I know, because a lot of people brought up, is this, as Keatsman is criticizing Pat Mahomes' physique, a lot of people bring up the various CC Sabathias of the world and what have you. That's where I feel like there's way too many. The sports are different. It's easier to get away with being a fat pitcher, is because,
yes,
there's very few fat, like genuinely fat quarterbacks.
Yep.
You know, there's very few. Jared Lorenzen's the all-time example. Like,
yeah.
And obviously that wasn't a body type that worked out. So, I don't like using pitchers as an example. But you're right, because there's so many of them that don't have great bodies.
Yeah.
Astros actually, for a long time now, have probably had the best physiques of, like, the most conditioned-looking pitchers. Because some people think that, erroneously believe that Framber's kind of chunky.
That's who I was
freaking yoked.
Is he really
built, man.
Okay.
Yeah, you look at his physique, he's just thick.
Yeah,
he's just got broad shoulders,
yeah,
and muscular trunk. Yeah.
Lance Berkman, there you go. Someone texted in Lance Berkman.
Yeah,
Berkman had
Lance
kind of a chubby
a fat
face,
face
yeah, he had a fat face.
He was, his body, when you looked at him, it wasn't like he was chunky. He just had a, kind of like Matt Stafford, you know, had a chunkier face than the rest of his body.
Yeah. Pre-Cali Matt Stafford. And he's eating kale and things like that now. He's thinned out a little bit. Jerk. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. The NFL Network has begun dropping the top 100 players, like two or three per day. They're into the mid-80s now. No Texans yet. We got a former Texan yesterday, which elicited more audio that made me agitated with the Laramie Tunsil era here in Houston. You will hear it coming up next.